Good morning. I'd like to welcome you to the services of the First Baptist Church in Toulon. This morning we want to give you a message that we hope is very appropriate for this Christmas season. We all understand that Jesus came to be born in a manger, but that he came as King of the Jews. This morning we want to bring you a message on the humble King. But before we have our message this morning, our choir has a special for us, Angels We Have Heard on High.
Scripture reading this morning is taken from the Gospel according to Luke, chapter 2, and we're going to begin reading in verse 1. Luke chapter 2, verse 1. And it came to pass in those days that a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that the world should be registered. This census first took place when Quirinius was governor of Syria. So all went to be registered, every one to his own city. Joseph also went up from Galilee, out of the city of Nazareth, into Judea, to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because there he was of the house and lineage of David, to be registered with Mary, his betrothed wife, who was with child. So it was that while they were there, the days were completed for her to be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son, and wrapped him in swaddling cloths, and laid him in a manger, because there was no room for them in the inn. You know what amazes me about this passage is not so much that there was no place in the inn. We've all had situations like that. I remember when we went to Pittsburgh, for Promise Keepers, we got to our hotel very late, like 11:30 or so, or midnight, and there was a gal who I think slept in the lobby because there were no rooms in any of the inns around. So that's just one of the hard knocks of life. You know, you get to the inn, there's no room. And it doesn't amaze me that Mary would have to lay Jesus in a manger, for she had nothing better to lay Him in. That was just the way it was. And it doesn't amaze me that Jesus was born at such an unfortunate time, because this certainly was not very good planning that they should have to go to Bethlehem at this very time. Bad timing happens to everybody. You know what amazes me all about this? What amazes me is that God allowed His Son to endure all of that. That's what amazes me. What amazes me is that God would allow His Son, the King of the Jews, to be treated in such a manner. Do you realize something? Do you realize that if anybody could, God could have pulled a few strings? You know what I mean, right? Oh, we're going to go to a certain place. Don't worry, I know the manager. We'll get a table. Pull a few strings. Draw in a few favors. Well, don't you think God could have done that? Don't you think that God could have pulled a few strings and made it a little different than it turned out being? You know, some of the guests that were in the inn that kept Mary and Joseph out of the inn might have gotten sick on the way. Might not have made it. Might have had to return home. Or think of this. Mary and Joseph come up to the door of the inn and they say, we need a place to stay. And the innkeeper says, I'm sorry, we don't have any place. And God just gives a little earthquake, you know, just at the right time. You know, the innkeeper might be thinking, well, you know, maybe we could find a place. Or maybe, you know, God could have gave the innkeeper a vision, a night dream, or a vision that would have frightened anybody to the point that in the vision they saw that tomorrow a man and a woman's going to come there and he'd better give them a room, even if it's his own. I think God could have pulled a few strings. What amazes me is that He didn't. He didn't. Or, you know, the innkeeper could have gotten a vision concerning all this big influx of customers that were coming. God could have let him know that that was going to happen. You know, by the way, Caesar's going to take the census. A lot of people are going to be here. You know, if you add on a room or two, you could pay for it in just these few weeks that they'll be here. But that didn't happen either. The point that I'm trying to make in all this is that Jesus did not need to be born in a barn. So why was He? I think the solution is very simple. We must always remember that truly Jesus was born a king, the King of the Jews. I love the song, How Should a King Come? Even a commoner understands, right? How does the king come? He doesn't come born in a manger. He doesn't come born in a stable. He doesn't come in that type of situation. He comes with all the pomp that a king should have. And Jesus would do all of that just like any other king or child of a king that was ever born. But you need to understand something. Jesus didn't burst into this world and wrest the control of this world from the people. Surely He came to be a king. But when He came to be a king, He did not come into people's lives and said, I'm the king and you will. He came into their lives and He said, I am a king if you will. He did not force people into submission 2,000 years ago, and He doesn't force people into submission even today. You see, Jesus came to be a king, but He came to be a humble king. And when you think about a humble king, that phrase is kind of an oxymoron. You know, it's like military intelligence or unbiased news reporting. It should seem that such a thing could not exist. How could you have a king who would be humble? I mean, have you ever heard of a humble king? No. Then how is it that Jesus came as a humble king? As we prepare our hearts at this Christmas time, this morning I want us to consider that humble king. First of all, I want you to know that Jesus truly is a king. He is a king to those who are willing subjects. He is a king to those who is willing subjects. You know, in our day and age, we don't want anybody to be the boss. I read a little quote this morning. It said, you know, when two people ride a horse, one person has to ride in front. You know, I never thought of that before, but you know that's true. I've never seen two people riding a horse and they were both equal. When two people ride a horse, one person is going to have to be in front. You see, the situation is let's say this is a throne. I'm a fairly good-sized guy. I don't think that two of us can fit in this throne. If I'm sitting here, I don't think there's room beside me for anybody else. Only one person can sit in this throne. In the throne of your life, only one person can sit in the throne. Now, Jesus came to be king. He came to sit on the throne of your life. But He didn't come to take you by the hand and yank you off the throne of your life so He could sit down. Jesus came to be the king of your life, but He came only to be the king of those who would willingly submit to Him. I like that passage over in the book of Psalms, Psalms 32 and verse 8. Actually, David's talking to people, but we get the idea of what he's saying. He says, I will instruct you and teach you in the way that you should go. I will guide you with my eye. I will guide you with my eye. Have you ever seen unruly children? Never? Sneak downstairs, you'll find out what they're like. Sure, we've seen unruly children. How do you control unruly children? Well, there are different ways. Sometimes, if you have a very good child, you can simply do what? You simply look at them. Huh? And we all remember that look, don't we? Huh? When mom or dad looked at us, we all remember that look. What did that look mean? That look meant, that's enough. No more. You see, God says, through David here, that God wants to be the king of our life. He wants to be the king of all those that will submit to Him. And the way that He wants us to submit to Him is that He wants us to be allowed to be guided by the look of His eye. Now you see, what's interesting is the passage that comes after that. You see, verses 9 and 10 says, do not be like the horse or like the mule, which have no understanding, which have to be harnessed with bit and bridle, else they will not come near you. Many sorrows shall be to the wicked, but he who trusts in the Lord, mercy shall surround him. You see, the idea is that Jesus came to be the king of our lives, but he wants to be a king that simply looks at us. Don't be like the horse. Don't be like the mule. Now, I've never broke a horse. Matter of fact, we had a horse one time that at the it was supposedly broken, but it kind of had a mind of its own. And when it broke the clothesline down, that was when we got rid of the horse, sold it someplace else. But the idea of a horse is that when you get on a horse, what do? You don't just say, okay, now turn left, turn right. You say what? You pull on the reins. Because you see, the horse, unless there is a bit in its mouth, unless you make it very uncomfortable for the horse to go the direction it's trying to go, unless you force it, it will not go where you want it to go. Jesus does not want to be that type of king. Jesus will not be that type of king. You know, some Christians say, well, if God didn't want me to do that, He should have stopped me. Folks, He's trying to guide you with His eye. He's trying to guide you with His eye. He wants... But you know what happens? In order to be guided with the eye, you have to keep looking at Jesus, don't you? When we were in Alabama, we were trying to find places, trying to find maps, and we were at Walmart, and Nance, we'd went and asked somebody, Victoria and I, that's we, had went and asked somebody, and we came back into the store to find Nancy, and I saw her over here. Victoria was right here. And I turned and walked that direction. But unbeknownst to me, Victoria was looking that way. And so I walked around a couple of little displays there, and she couldn't see me. So I got over there, and Nancy says, where's Victoria? So I turned around, and here she is, crying. Why? She couldn't see me. You see, the only way that you can know that Jesus is the King of your life is if you always can see Him. Because, you see, He can't guide you with His eye unless you can see Him. Now, lest you think that doesn't make sense, there's a little passage over in Luke chapter 22, verse 60 and 62. We know the story very clearly. Peter is at the fire, warming himself. He's denied Christ once, twice, three times throughout, you know. Once, twice, he's on the third time. And it says, immediately, while he was still speaking, the rooster crowed, and the Lord turned and looked at Peter. And Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had said, "Before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times." So Peter went out and wept bitterly. You need to understand that Jesus didn't have to get a hold of Peter and shake him and say, "Peter, look what you've done." He didn't have to beat Peter into submission. All it took was a look. Jesus came to be the king of your life, but he's only be a king of those who are submissive to him. He's not going to yank you off the throne so he can sit down. He's a king, but he will only be the king when we allow him to be king. I read a thing, it said, a lifetime commitment is not made in a minute. A lifetime commitment takes a lifetime to make. You see, the trouble is, a lot of times with Christians, is that we all go back to a spiritual experience or experiences that we've had in the past, but we need to realize that those spiritual experiences does not necessarily mean that we are committed today. A lifetime commitment takes a lifetime to make. And Jesus will be the king of our lives as long as we allow him to be king. You need to understand that what happened when we were saved, we said, "Lord, here, you're the Lord. Here's the throne of my life. You sat down." And Jesus sat down. But then later on, we came by and we said, "I'm sorry, but right now, you need to move because I'm going to do what I want to do." And you take Jesus off the throne of your life and you sit down where you were before. Now that doesn't mean you're lost. It just means you're messed up. And I got news for you. We're all a little messed up. Some of us more than others. But Jesus will only be the king of your life when you allow him. Or you can come on Sunday morning and let him be the Lord of your Sunday morning. But what about your Sunday afternoons and your Mondays and Tuesdays and every other day of the week? When we submit to him at one time, doesn't mean that we're always going to submit to him. And then also, when we take Jesus as our king, he is our king only in the areas of our life that we allow him to be king. I was thinking about this week and I had almost forgotten about it. Back when I was hardly a teenager at the Methodist Church out in Snareville, I don't know, they must have had a layman Sunday or something, and my older brother, who was 14 years older than me, spoke. The only time I ever heard him speak at church, but anyway. But what's interesting is that I remember what he said. He talked about allowing Jesus to be the king of your life. And what he said wasn't complicated, it was very simple, but it was very profound. Sometimes the most simple things are the most profound. You see, what he said is he likened your life to a house with all different rooms. Now, in the old houses, not in the new houses, but in the old houses, in the parsonage, every door has a lock. Now, hundreds of years ago, we lost the keys to those locks. But every door has a lock. And what he said is your life is like a house filled with rooms, and they are all locked, and you have all the keys. And when you make Jesus the king of your life, the Lord of your life, what do? Is you come in and you say, "Here are the keys to the rooms of my life." But usually we don't give him all the keys. Usually there's a couple of rooms of our life that we kind of just keep those keys for ourselves, because we really don't want Jesus in those rooms. We don't really want Jesus to be that involved with us, that he's with us all the time. And so what we've done is we've got he's invited into the living room, he's invited into all these rooms. But you know, the closet or the attic or the basement, those more pleasant rooms in our houses, we've got the keys stuffed in a pocket away. And when we go into that room, we lock the door behind us, because Jesus doesn't have a key to that room. You see, Jesus wants to be the King of our life, and He will be the King of our life in all of the areas that we allow Him to be King. You need to realize He's a humble King. He will not take you off the throne so that He can sit down. Now, I don't know how each of us are. Each of us have different houses. Some of us live in houses with a lot of rooms. But sometimes we haven't given Jesus all the keys to all the rooms. How is that true? Each of us have areas of our life where Jesus rules. He is the King. There's no question about it. Sunday morning, Jesus is King. You see, He might have the key to our worship room. He probably has the key to our Bible reading room. He probably has the key to our prayer room. But I wonder if He has the key to the TV room. Or does He have the key to the computer room? Read some startling statistics here recently. Pornography on the internet, it seems that Christians are just about as much involved in it as non-Christians. Does Jesus have the key to all the rooms in your life? What about the gossip room? Huh? What about the telephone room? You know, the room where you get on there and you call and you're talking to your friends and you say, we need to pray for so-and-so. Just wanting to let you know the situation in their life. Yes. Oh, yes. I know it. It's terrible. Does Jesus have the key to all those rooms? You see, there are benefits to letting Jesus have the key to all the rooms. Probably one of my favorite passages in all the Bible is found over in the book of Isaiah chapter 57. And verse 15 it says, thus says the High and Lifty One who inhabits eternity, whose name is holy, I dwell in the high and lofty and holy place. Well, we like that, right? God is holy. He lives up there in the high and lofty place, the angels around Him. But what does it say? It says, with Him who has a contrite and a humble spirit. You see, Jesus is a humble King. He's come to be the King of the humble. And then some people say, well, Pastor, I tell you what, you know, and I'm not a person that makes lists. There are those churches that they've got the list, you know. Have you ever seen the list? They've got a list of all the things you cannot do. I have an idea they've left off a few things. The things that they've left off are the things that they are doing. We all have our own list. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that. Of course, the people that you're saying that about, they're saying about you, well, I wouldn't do what they're doing. We all have our... I don't think that we need to make a list. I was one place one time and the fellow said, you know what we need to do is we need to make a list of all the stuff you can't do and put it in the back of the hymn book. I said, man alive, what in the world is that going to do for people? You know, Congress has enough laws to fill this auditorium. Does that keep people from doing it? No. You see, what keeps people from doing what they shouldn't do is if Jesus is the King of their life. If He's got a key to all the rooms, if He's sitting on the throne, if He's sitting on the throne, you don't have to have a rule that says don't break somebody else's toy because you know that you're not supposed to do that. You know, at Christmas time, you'd surely think that Jesus is sitting on the throne, wouldn't you? You see, Jesus was born in a barn out in the cold. And I'm persuaded that in many people's lives, He is still out in the barn, out in the cold. Because there's no place, there's no room for Him in the inn. There's no room in the heart. There's no room in the mind. Our lives are full. So many things to do. So many places to go. And Jesus isn't going to come along and say, okay, I want to see your day planner. We've got a few changes to make here. He's not going to do that. He's going to let you schedule Him in wherever you do. He's not going to tear you off the throne of your life so that He can sit down there. He is not going to do that. He is a humble King. That's why He was born in a manger. But I want you to know that He still beckons us to yield to Him today. 2,000 years later, the words of Matthew 11, 28 through 30 come back to us. It says, come unto me, all you that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Jesus is a humble King. Today, He's still a humble King. And what He wants from me is He wants to sit on the throne of my life. He doesn't want to sit there just on Sunday morning. He doesn't want to sit there just when I'm reading my Bible. He wants to sit on that throne every minute of every hour of every day of my life. You say, man, that's a lot. Yeah. But you need to understand the decision is yours. If you say no, He's a humble king. He'll go to the stable. He'll go to the manger. He's not going to throw you out so that He can have the rightful place in your life and in your heart. Jesus came to be a humble king. For many people, they think God demands too much. They don't want that much of God. One fellow wrote this. He said, I would like to buy $3 worth of God, please. Not enough to explode my soul or disturb my sleep, but just enough to equal a cup of warm milk or a snooze in the sunshine. I don't want enough of Him to make me love a black man or pick beets with a migrant. I want ecstasy, not transformation. I want the warmth of the womb, not a new birth. I want a pound of the eternal in a paper sack. I'd like to buy $3 worth of God, please. Isn't that sad? That $3 worth of God would be all that you would want. I don't know each one's situation today. I know my heart. And I know that it's a struggle. It's a struggle. Because we're all a little bit like Molly. We all want to be our own boss. We all want to be our own king. We all want to call the shots. But you need to understand that if we're calling the shots, Jesus is not.
How is it with you this Christmas season? Are you calling the shots? Have you regulated Jesus to the stable of your life? Have you said to Him on various occasions, yes, come in, sit down, here's the throne of my heart. Sit down and rule. But then later on, only to turn Him away, only to turn Him aside, back into the stable. Jesus is a humble king. He was a humble king 2,000 years ago when He came and took the lowliest spot that we could imagine to be born in a barn. But do you realize that Jesus is still a humble king today? In your heart and in your life, Jesus wants to be the king. He wants to be your Lord. Because you see, He knows that if He's your Lord and that if you will follow Him, that your life will be blessed, that your life will be much richer. He knows that He has the solutions to your problems. He knows that He is the one that can make you what you really ought to be. But He's not going to come in and wrestle you for that kingship. He's going to allow you to do what you want with your life. It's so sad that at this Christmas season, of all the things that people could do, that they would duplicate the errors of 2,000 years ago. Is Jesus your king today? Or will this Christmas really mean Jesus will have to spend another Christmas in the stable? In your heart and in your life, will Jesus really have to remain outside? Because your Christmas is filled with too many things. It's filled with presents. It's filled with shopping. It's filled with cooking. It's filled with getting the decorations up. It's filled with going to all the kids' activities. It's just so full that there's not much room for Jesus there. Don't make Jesus spend another Christmas in the stable of your life. Bring Him to the throne and surrender to Him. Give Him the lordship of your life. You've been listening to the services of the First Baptist Church in Toulon. Our worship service is every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. For more information, give us a call, 286-4611. We wish you each a very Merry Christmas.